The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Yo, what's up? Welcome back to the show. David Scales here, your host of Surf Splendor. Bringing you an episode of Surf News with Scott Bass today. And we began this recording February 2nd, Tuesday morning, the final day of the Vulcan Pipe Pro. We're actually watching it while we're recording. We make reference to it a couple of times. And then comment on who's performing well and who's not and who's going to make it and who's not. And we were wrong. I was wrong a bunch of times. So need to mention that now because now I'm recording this intro after the event has ended. And geez, Bruce Irons made me look stupid and Kelly Slater as well. So there you go. Not to spoil the results, I'm sure you already know. But disregard whatever I say throughout this episode from this point on because I could not look into the future like I can now. I was going to just like delete it out, but figured that would not be cool. So anyways, there's that. Otherwise, enjoy the show. Find us on social media at Surf Splendor. SurfSplendorPodcast.com is the website. You can find everything that we discuss, the links to the articles, the videos, the photos, all of that there, as well as a archive of all past episodes available for free. All right, check that out. And enjoy the show. I'll be back at the end to sign us off.
We're live. Did you say we're live?
We're live.
Hell yeah. Yeah, guy. We're live. David, do we know what we need? We need some music. How do
Turn
we do
up.
This? How do we get some music going here? It is Tuesday. It is February 2nd, and there's a lot of action going on in the surf world. Not the least of which is the Vulcan Pipe Pro, which David and I are watching right now. And you can hear it now. Listen to that.
Instead of music, let's just get Von Blakey's voice at the Vulcan Pipe Pro.
No, Von Blakey, you're out.
I love me some Von.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Here's something to start off the show with, all right?
That's why people tune into our podcast. Get some rad guitar riffs every time.
Okay, down the line, Surf Talk Radio. The unofficial band of the show, the Allman Brothers, kicking us off there. I got a new Allman Brothers shirt, by the way. I went online, I bought a t-shirt.
Wow, true fan.
It's got that, it's got a picture of Dwayne Allman, and it's got that, you know that Obama...
yeah. The Shepherd Fairey, like
the color
three tone.
Yeah, what is that called? That in the graphic world, that's called
a lineal cut.
When you do that thing to the image, it's called a filter or something. Anyway, it's got the Obama coloring on it, and it's got a picture of Dwayne Allman playing the guitar, and it just says best underneath it.
Instead of hope or change or whatever the Obama campaign
right,
was.
Right.
That was a Shepard Fairey is the artist from Obey.
Right.
The company.
Yeah, the Obey guy.
Yeah.
Cool.
And he ripped off a Associated Press image to use, like a Associated Press photo to use that, to do that silk screen was what it was. And then he got sued by them because it, like, he's done a bunch of stuff that just flies under the radar, like the Obey the Giant campaign that he launched his company with. It flies under the radar, so nobody ever sues him because they never really see it. But that took off, and Obama's campaign ran with it, and then he got sued by the Associated Press or something.
Huh, I wonder how that worked out.
In the end, it worked out fine because then he became super popular and sold a bunch of other work, you know?
Right.
I could be butchering that story. I was just watching it from afar, kind of on the sideline. But I get what you're saying. Now, the Allman Brothers ripped off Shepard Fairey's intellectual property to do their own.
No, not the Allman Brothers, just some t-shirt company Oshkosh, Wisconsin that I just found online. There's a million of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
That's
funny. I'm sure they took the photo from somebody. They probably ripped off the photo. Now I'm wearing a complete fabrication and artistic ripoff. But anyway.
It's the way our world works.
Dwayne Allman.
Yeah.
The best.
The best. I loved your alliteration of the word February, by the way.
February.
You just slipped it in there.
Tough word to say.
Tough, but you said it correctly.
Thank you, sir.
I don't like saying it. I avoid saying it altogether.
Yes, sir. The second month of 12 months.
Yeah, the Feb.
What do you got for us?
Quick follow-up from last week. I was corrected multiple times in multiple platforms. Twitter, email, comments on the website, and Instagram. About Kiahi Abortiz, I believe is what his name is, the guy that got the insane wave at Backdoor.
Wave of the Winter, potentially.
That's what I'm claiming.
According to Surfline's
nominee,
right, for Wave of the Winter, Surfline's Wave of the Winter.
Totally. And the correction that I got was just that he's not an underground no-name charger. He's actually a two-time kite surfing champion and all-round waterman. A lot of people knew who he was. He's not really that famous in the surf world. Proper surfboard world, but he's super well known in the kite surf world. And
he's the guy who had that pretty famous Instagram clip of him on a kiteboard at Jaws just getting ejected and literally like the lip, you know, a 40-foot thick lip hitting him in the face. And then there's like a clip of him commentating about it. It's pretty funny.
Which I think happened since we recorded that episode, right?
Oh, no, I thought it was before.
Maybe it did.
Yeah.
Maybe it did. But at any rate, Kiahi Abortiz,
well-known guy, just not David and I had no clue. Who he
under
was.
My radar.
He's a kite surfer guy, Maui guy, a wind guy, all-around waterman guy, and congrats to him because an insane, obviously a great surfer.
Australian though, originally. I know that he's from Maui.
But
here's what I've realized doing this show is how myopic my focus is on surfing. Like I've paid tremendous amount of attention to high performance shortboarding for the majority of my life, and mainly the top 10 guys in that world, maybe the top 10 like competitive guys and the top 10 free surf guys. So maybe there's 20.
Well, it's interesting, you know, what you bring up and what comes to my mind when you say that is that really who is the greatest water person, you know, because you could throw this Kiahi guy in there and I probably butchered his name.
Sure.
How do we say his name? Because I'm going to butcher it the whole show.
I'm going to say Kiahi.
Okay, so Kiahi. So when you think about, I mean, what's been hitting you and I lately in the entire surf world, right? It's just tons of big wave surfing. And then before that, before the El Nino started, we saw all this incredible aerial game leading up to the world title. And so we've really had a stew of just of incredible performances all over at Nazare.
Nazare?
Nazare, thank you. Nazare in your other parts of Europe, in, you know, Chopu, now in Hawaii, El Nino. We haven't even seen Mavericks yet. We've got Waimea Bay. So we've just got, like, really all sorts of incredible action in the water. We've got this Brad Domke guy on a freaking skim board. I mean, we've just been thrown everything. Everything's been thrown at us, I should say, right? So my question to you is, who is the greatest waterman? Who's the greatest all-around waterman? Is it Kelly Slater? Is it Jamie Mitchell? Is it Albie Layer? Who is the overall?
Kai Lenny.
Well, that's who I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Stepped on it.
No, you didn't. Everyone would agree. I would suggest to you that Kai Lenny is far and away the greatest waterman.
Yeah.
Now, there could be some other guys in the mix that we're not even thinking of, but when you think about, like,
Molokai to Oahu paddle race, when you think about a guy who can do stand-up paddleboarding, who's an insane kiteboarder, who's an incredible surfer, who's just frothing to and can surf anything all over the place, do aerials, surf 50-foot jaws, who's the guy? He's Albie Lehr, Kai Lenny, those. No, I mean, Albie, the list.
I don't know of Albie doing anything other than riding a surfboard.
Right.
You know, I don't know that he paddles. I don't know that he dives. I mean, I think of...
Does Kai Lenny dive?
I don't know, but I think of Mark Healy when Healy I think would of be that in conversation.
There. Healy would be in there, but Healy doesn't kiteboard. But who says you have to do that? We're just saying, look, all-around waterman. Like,
yeah, well, the other thing is...
Who would you trust when you're... Like Eddie Aikau, when the boat's going down and you need somebody to paddle 40 miles to safety to get help, you know, do you send Healy? Do you send Kai Lenny? Do you send Billy Kemper?
Jamie Mitchell.
You send Jamie Mitchell.
Jamie.
That's who the waterman is. The guy, not only the guy you send, but the guy who raises his hand and says, I'm going to go do this, which is what Eddie Aikau did.
Yeah. Well, you picked a very specific scenario, paddling. In that case, I picked Jamie. If you're going to pick, you know, you dropped some family heirloom in the ocean, you need somebody to dive down 100 yards to grab it, I'm picking Mark Healy in that scenario. You know, like, so I don't know. But the other thing is, I'm not the most educated on who's the best waterman. Like I right. said, I have this very specific focus, and I could talk to you about who's going to do the sickest air this next year. But
we don't want to hear that.
No, we don't. Like, but I'm recognizing now that my interests have developed, and I need to be more aware of who these guys are, because as I've gotten older and my ability to do aerials has waned, like, I'm more interested.
Wait a minute. Have you ever done an aerial?
I have.
No, you haven't.
Okay.
Oh my. He said you.
No, I'm not saying
you waved me off as if, dude, whatever. I don't have to prove that to you.
I
man.
Don't, and I'm not even trying to do them anymore. But I have over the course of my surfing experience.
Well,
but
if you've done one aerial, you've done one more than me. I'll tell you that.
Really.
Maybe I maybe have done one. There was a time when I was trying to do one.
Okay.
At a certain surf spot during a certain session, and somebody, I think Alex Gray and some other guy said that I might have maybe gotten a little credit card error, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
I haven't.
We digress. We were talking about all around watermen, of which you and I are not.
Yeah. So nor aerialists, apparently.
No.
But so at any rate, I'm more interested, and I think that there is more of a market for that waterman thing. Like, you know, there's all those areas that we just talked about are expanding in the world of competition. They're expanding in the world of, like, now there's clothing made for that sort of stuff. And so as there's a market for it, Hurley is sponsoring Kai Lenny, and big brands are sponsoring these guys, and it will start to make its way into media, and then we'll start to see it, and we'll start to...
I would agree with that. I think it's I can see brands going, you know what, mainstream America is interested in this all-around guy, you know. And by the way, Kai Lenny's a pretty damn good ambassador for our brand. Like, he's well spoken, he's handsome, he's you know,
and he's young. It's shocking how young the
really
he's like
young.
22.
Yeah,
he's crazy.
He's totally mentally young. Yeah, and Dorian's that way too, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's sort of neat for the brands to get out of the niche of, you know, riding 5'9" performance surfboards, right, and breaking into this, hey, man, there's much more to this lifestyle than just this. These guys dive. These guys paddle. These guys take on these challenges in windy conditions. They surf huge, piahi. And so I guess the question is it Kai Lenny? Is Kai Lenny? Because at one point it was Laird. You could definitely say it was
Laird. Got to give an honorable mention. We haven't even said Laird's name yet.
Well, he might be still that guy, but he's not right now in the water this season paddling piahi.
Yeah, but to be honest, I feel like Laird kind of shies away from the crowds and the spotlight, and now that Jaws is blown up and there's helicopters, he's just like, out of here. I'll go surf somewhere else where the waves are still treacherous, but I don't need all the attention. And he's probably testing out some new tech while he's doing it.
No, I'm not doubting that he could do it. I'm just saying that he's... You're right. We've got to throw him into the equation. Is he still in the top five? Is Laird Hamilton still in the top five all-around waterman?
I think the guys on the inside...
I think he's, quite frankly, too old.
Do you?
Yeah, you get to a point where it's like, dude, you got to... You know, like, How old is Laird?
He hasn't shown
Laird's
his age.
Probably 53 years old.
But that's only a number, dude. I mean, he hasn't shown his age in terms of slowing down or physical fitness. He seems to be
probably... I mean, we don't know. He hasn't showed up. How do you know he's not on the cliff watching it all go down and just...
I don't know. But, I don't know, but I doubt that. Here's another comment I have that I thought about last show, but I didn't really mention when we were talking about board design and big wave surfing. Kai Lenny riding that shorter stand-up paddle at Jaws, that was the most maneuverable surfboard in the lineup as far as I could
tell.
Well,
a couple
of
things.
He's ripping on
that. I agree with you that, and what actually makes it a viable design in those big waves is the paddle. If you'll see him, he'll use that paddle and it's like another fin. It's a it's a stabilizing factor for him. I watched him numerous times use the paddle, put it in the wave face, which helped him sort of check down the bumps and get through it all. And I think the paddle is the biggest benefit. You know, I'm not so sure the design is that evolved. I think it's probably too thick in the tail. And
I mean, I agree with the paddle portion, but the board itself, he's ripping on the thing and he's getting like not as much drive, but a lot more kind of pivot in his turns, I guess is what
Which is what those boards do, right? Yeah. They're so thick and wide in the tail that they sort of do these fin check turns.
Yes.
As opposed to a full gouging rail thing, but who's doing full gouging rail?
Nobody.
Turns? Although we've seen guys put their rail underneath the lip and hook it underneath the lip at Piahi recently, and you know there's something to be said for that. So, and certainly these guys that are doing these big, massive bottom turns are bearing their full rail. Kai Lenny's bottom turns do seem to be aided by the paddle, and are.
They're not the. It's
they're
not
deep drawn in. Yeah. Dry. It's more like off the fin.
But it's also probably EPS, that stand up paddle. So it looks more buoyant and more, like it's skimming across the ocean surface. He's not really getting, and you know it's wider and thicker. So you
and
can't
I don't think
get,
they're custom made. I think they're boards that are just coming off the boat from Asia. And
you think so?
They're all one design. I could be wrong. He's certainly worthy of having custom stand up paddles made. Stand-up paddle boards made on Maui, but it just they look as if they're the color scheme is as such that it's just one of the many that comes off of the boat.
Yeah,
but you know
I don't
who
know.
Knows? I'm sure he has custom stand-up paddle boards made, but if he did, you'd think they might be a little bit narrower in the tail.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Kai Lenny, the greatest surfer slash waterman, the greatest waterman right now, number one.
My completely limited expertise on that, I'm going to say sure.
Who out? Okay, so if you're listening and we're missing something, tell us who's in the conversation there.
Yeah.
We know it's Kai.
Jamie Mitchell. I'm going to throw Healy in there.
Healy for sure.
Yeah. This Kiahi Abortiz, apparently.
He's got to be in the mix, right?
Yeah.
And then, well, you know, there's these old school guys like Laird and Robbie Nash. You know, both of them are older. Robbie Nash is just like legendary kite paddle stand up.
Okay.
Like Nash, that's who Kai, I think, rides his equipment.
Oh, okay.
Nash stand up paddle boards.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Robbie Nash will go out in 40-foot jaws on a kite board and, you know,
really
do the deal. But he, like Laird, is probably 50 something.
Right.
At some point, you got to lay down the kite.
Yeah. Well, so we're talking about kind of our myopic focus in surfing and these other guys who are, you know, ripping and setting world records whose names we don't know. Like we mentioned Aaron Gold last week, Kiahi. There is, by the way, I spoke to Aaron Gold on the phone. I was trying to link up with him to do a podcast. It wasn't going to work. He was in transit between Todos and back home, but, super humble, interesting guy building his own boards and all that sort of thing. So, seems like he'll have a lot of opportunity ahead of him based on the success of that one wave and on the 15th.
Well, but, he's going to win the XXL Big Wave Award, right?
I mean, yeah. It really looks that way. So anyways, these kind of no-name or lesser-known guys, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but the massive swell last week at Waimea where it was just like maxed out, there was closeouts. What I loved about that day is Kelly Slater and Ross Williams and Mason Ho couldn't even make the paddle out. You know, like the most elite of the elite of guys whose names we know couldn't make the paddle out. They end up watching it from shore and watching waves of guys who they respect but names we don't know, like Luke I forget the kid's name. I'll think of it while
Shepherdson.
I'm talking. Luke Shepherdson.
Yeah.
Paddles out and gets a sick one. And
apparently
Peter,
he owned the day out
yeah.
there.
And I think he's like 21 years old. And Peter King, who's doing his tour notes thing, is filming Kelly commentate on Luke Shepherdson get a sick wave and how rad that wave is. And now they got to buy him a plate lunch because he made the paddle out and they couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, like those are the stories that I love. And they make me realize, man, I need to expand my focus and keep tabs on who these guys are.
Well, interesting day. I mean, how many times in the past 10 years has Waimea closed out? Let's say in 10 years it's closed out, let's say five times. I don't even know.
Maybe
right?
one set a day that closes out.
So check this out. So that Wednesday, last Wednesday, I pull up the Waimea cam. As soon as I pull it up, massive closeout set comes through. It was the most random thing that I happened to be logged on to a Surfline's cam when a huge closeout set rolled through. And so the question immediately went to my mind, and you and I, God, we talk about this ad nauseum. How come the Eddie Aikau event, the Quicksilver in memory of Eddie Aikau, did not run on Wednesday?
So when you pulled that cam up, it was in the morning, I assume.
No, it was, well, yeah, it was probably, you know, 1 o'clock here, so what, 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning there.
Okay, got it.
The bay is closing out. Kelly Slater couldn't make it out, right? This is an incredibly, well, it was a remarkable, I mean, people were remarking on this swell.
Yeah.
And not most notably, Ross Williams and Kelly Slater remarking on it, everyone remarking on it, on Instagram, whatever. So Quicksilver put out a statement, and you probably saw it on Surfline. It went something like this.
Saw it everywhere.
Let's set the story.
They put it on their own Instagram account.
Right. Let's, and this is a quote from them.
Yeah.
Let's set the story straight. The team here at Quicksilver want the Eddie to run more than anyone. However, we also want it to be a fair event contested in conditions Eddie Aikau himself would have approved of. For this prestigious event to get the green light, the event criteria must be met. The waves must, and they capitalize this, be in 20-foot-plus range for an entire contestable 8-hour period. That means from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Waimea Bay must be bigger than 20 foot. The judging format for the Eddie is different to every other event in the world. The surfer waves in the first heat are judged against the surfer's waves in the last heat. Therefore, if we ran the event yesterday where the waves didn't peak until the afternoon, the first three heats would have been surfed in smaller, lesser, unfair conditions. End of their Quicksilver quote. Well, okay, that's bullshit.
Total bull.
That's complete bullshit. And
the swell
everybody
always,
online commented and said bullshit.
The swell always peaks at a given time.
Exactly.
And you can't, it's not going to be an 8-hour peak.
No Eddie ever. Event has ever had the same waves throughout the day.
No.
That's just the way it is. And usually it's bigger in the morning and gets worse for the final, which is wrong in and of itself. Not the final, but because they're all judged against each other, right? So, like I said, people on Surfline and around the internet immediately chimed in. Hey, first of all you got to do is watch the rewind of the Surfline cam, and you'll see 20-foot sets early in the morning.
Yep,
there, it was easily 20-foot. I actually watched the cam rewind from the next day, and in the morning there was close to closeout sets coming in still on a day that, you know, was half of what it was the day before.
Yeah.
Of course. So their quote, Quicksilver's statement, their press release, whatever, it didn't go over well. Now, George Downing has always been the guy that makes the call for the Quicksilver Eddie Aikau, right? Health-wise, George Downing, I don't think, is doing very well. He's sort of out of the picture, and I'm assuming that, but that's the feeling you get. You don't hear from him in any of the press. You don't see him. I don't even think he's on the payroll anymore. So Quicksilver, what they don't have anymore is they don't have this Hawaiian patriarch, right, to lean on. They need this. They need a figure like George Downing to sort of control the event, to be the guy that they can all point to and go, look, George says that the Bay calls the day, and George is saying no. Well, they don't have that, right? We got this statement from, we don't even know who, somebody in the Quicksilver marketing department who I'm not even sure knows how to swim, let alone surf.
Yeah.
So what they really need is a Hawaiian patriarch. And so my question to you, David, is, who is that guy? Who is the Hawaiian patriarch that Quicksilver would be extremely smart to identify and go, this is our new guy. This is the guy that's taking George's place. He's the guy that's going to help us restore credibility to the Eddie event.
That's a great question. You've obviously thought about this.
Who's, yeah.
I, I need a minute to think about it. Who
One guy. There's really one guy. I mean, if you make a short list of Hawaiian-type guys, right, there's one guy that sort of stands out like he's the guy. And that guy is Brian Kealana.
Okay.
Brian Kealana is respected throughout the islands. He's sort of, in a way, he's sort of the father of water safety. You know, he's been a lifeguard forever. He knew Eddie Aikau. Of course, he's the son of Buffalo Kealana from Makaha area. Brian is the guy that everyone would go, yeah, Brian's the new George Downing. So Quiksilver would be super smart to get Brian Kealana on their payroll and basically go, you are our figurehead. You're the guy we point to. Anything Eddie Aikau, anything the Quiksilver in memory of Eddie Aikau runs through you. And that's what needs to happen for them to sort of regain their credibility because they certainly have lost it.
Well, that statement that they released was an attempt to quell the public's, questions and concerns. It did the exact opposite. It almost proved to me that you guys aren't going to run because this criteria that you set out, we've already ticked all of these boxes to a greater degree than we have in other years when you have run. So you obviously have no intention of running.
And of course, the elephant in the room here is that Quiksilver was in bankruptcy, right? Just last week, they came out of bankruptcy. The bankruptcy court in Delaware said, you know what, we approve your bankruptcy, what you want to do. And now this new group, I think it's Oak Tree Capital, they now basically own Quiksilver and they own Billabong too.
90% of Quiksilver.
Yeah. And they're involved in the Billabong restructuring as well. So it's understandable, right, that, look, we're not going to run the Eddie, but everyone knows, look, you're in bankruptcy. You can't run the Eddie.
Right.
And there was some rumor that the WSL was running around Surf Expo trying to get brands to get on board and to help pay for it so that they could run it. I don't know.
WSL have anything to do with the Eddie?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. You know?
Is it part of their Big Wave World Tour?
I don't think it is. No, I think it's just a
standalone deal. Yeah, and again, that was just a rumor, a parking lot rumor, which, which you and I report, but we can't validate.
No.
And this is a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We're not journalists.
That gives us like no obligation to any of the red tape.
But it also gives us an obligation to say, hey, look, you know what? It's probably bullshit. Because we're just you and I sitting here rapping out, having fun with talking surf. And, you can't take too much of what we say.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us a free pass, Scott.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
But so if the bankruptcy is the elephant in the room, they're now out of bankruptcy. The wise, wise thing for them to do. If, in fact, they want the Quiksilver in memory of Eddie to be sort of a flagship, of sort of a foundational piece of their marketing, which I think they would want to do.
Absolutely.
They need to get a hold of Brian Kealana and go, our guy.
I like that plan totally. I hadn't really thought of that angle, but you're 100% correct. They do need a figurehead they need a chef in the kitchen. There's no chef right now, essentially.
Yeah.
And even that George Downing info that you gave, it's like, oh yeah, I remember George Downing's involved with that, but I forgot.
He used to be in all the press releases. He would be like, George would say, not today because of this, or we're looking at the swell. It looks like it could be good, but...
But they haven't even made reference to him.
No,
that statement that they put out on Instagram, they didn't mention his name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's out of the picture.
And so he's out
sadly,
of the picture.
You know, I mean, he's lived a full life, but I think he's, things are, he's an older gentleman. But so, Brian's the guy, but then I guess it sort of comes back to, are there others that could be on the shortlist that we're not thinking about? Quite frankly, Brian just sticks out as like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
He's taught all these guys water safety. He was the first guy in a jet ski to go in and save a guy, that was stuck in a hole on the west side. And they realized, hey, you know what? This jet ski thing works.
Yeah.
And this was before they even had the really killer. This was in, 90 or 88. Mm-hmm. Early on, they used a jet ski to save a guy. So anyway, Brian, then there's other guys like Brock Little, who sadly we know has cancer, but Brock would be a name that you might throw out there, a guy who has history with the event and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's actually another story.
Totally. We'll get to that. So let's do a quick detour onto Quiksilver because you mentioned their bankruptcy. This all just went down last week. It was on SMH.com, an Australian website.
That's the Sydney Morning Herald.
Yeah. So they filed Chapter 11, which we discussed in this show previously. but the bankruptcy court has allowed them to eliminate $600 million worth of debt, which...
$1,000 of that is mine, because I own $1,000 of shares of Quicksilver.
I remember when you were buying that, you're like, yeah, why not? What could go wrong?
I'm like, dude, it's so cheap. I'm getting it for 50 cents. It's going to go to $1.50. I'll sell it and triple my money, cover my taxes.
Which Billabong did, by the way. Billabong was trading at 50 cents, and now it's up, or it went up to 150. But anyway... So they had $900 million in debt, which is almost $1 billion, by the way. Billion with an M. Just kidding. So they're down to $300 million. But basically, Oaktree now owns more than 90% of the company. Quicksilver is closing underperforming stores in North America, winding up or renegotiating contracts with athletes and licensees, restructuring its supply chain, rebuilding relationships with suppliers, and reducing the number of products by more than 20%. Comment, renegotiating contracts with athletes. They've eliminated all their A-list athletes, obviously. Not eliminated, but like Kelly and Dane opted not to renew. Craig Anderson opted not to renew. The guys that they keep, they've got Jeremy Flores. They've got Wiggly Dantes. They've got Aritz Aramburu.
Do they have Balaram Stack?
No, Balaram's on Volcom. Oh. He left a year or two ago.
Okay, all of those guys,
I know.
I would just get rid of all of them.
Well, I have a feeling it's just like they probably gave them low ball, or they were already the low paid guys on the totem pole.
Well, that's the way you do it, right? You either have a lot of guys that are all low ball guys, and you're just barely paying them. Like you're paying them like $1,000 a month and giving them a lot of product or something like that,
yeah.
Right? But you're not getting a lot of ROI except your logo's out there in all of these events on their boards, right?
Yeah, which is what it is. And
that's not bad, but... If you want an athlete to drive sales like the way Jordan Spieth drives sales for Under Armour or Ricky Fowler does for Puma, you need to – first of all, we're not sure that that model even works in the surf space. I don't think it does.
And it hasn't for the last few years apparently.
I mean, I think John – we always talk about this. There's like two guys that move product.
Yeah.
John and Alana Blanchard. And I think Bethany Hamilton moves product, quite frankly.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Again, talking about our myopic focus, you and I
know, we're so southern.
We are. So it's like, I think Jeremy Flores is moving a ton of product in France.
Yeah, he might.
And in Europe. And Wiggly Dantes in Brazil. So what Quicksilver, another portion of what they're doing, according to SMH.com, is... they plan to roll out a new retail format called Board Riders after successfully testing the concept with a handful of stores in Australia, Japan, Europe, and Russia. Board Riders stores are around 750 square meters, three times the size of an average store, but they have barber shops, live music, as well as hard goods such as surfboards, skateboards, and snowboards, as well as Quicksilver's full range of apparel and footwear brands. So... that concept has had success in areas that those surfers are from and had success in. So it's like Aritz and Flores are probably selling a ton of product in Europe. Those guys are icons in Europe. Thiago Perez in Portugal, who's still on the team that we haven't discussed yet. So these concept stores are doing well there. Those guys are moving product there. They're going to apply that concept here. Will they bring in...
It's funny. You know, Southern California is California in general is a weird place. It's a weird market. It's fascinating because, quote unquote, the industry, surf industry is from here. But I can see how those stores would do great in Europe. They're not as jaded. For whatever reason, California is sort of jaded and salty, and it's almost like we don't care. Even, and I mean, when I say we, I mean the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the East Coast of the United States, I think in Europe, I think in, even in Australia, all these other places, Japan, they eat that crap up. Mm-hmm. They're like, cool, I'm going to Board Riders so I can be a part of my people, my mm-hmm. tribe. This is who I am. This is how I identify. Whereas here, we're like, I'd rather wear an Allman Brothers t-shirt than anything that says surf on it because I just don't...
I'm kind of repelled by it.
I'm repelled. I am repelled. There's a little bit of vomit in my mouth right now. So I think that you and I are skewed. We don't see the big picture on... And I think it makes sense for Quicksilver to have these sort of concept stores in these places. And I think it probably does well. According to what you just read, they're doing well with it.
Yeah, but you and I aren't who they're selling product to anyways. That's what it all comes down to is they're selling product to kids who want to be a part of the surf culture who aren't paddling out at 6 a.m.
Right, but if we look at
it's like a bigger market.
A 15-year-old kid in Southern California that's down at the beach just a quarter mile from here right now. And we say to ourselves, look, with Instagram, with social media, the world's a much smaller place. They're not as jaded just because they're regionally in Southern California. In other words, that 15-year-old kid just down the street, he's looking at Instagram and he's going, Clay Marzo, I love that guy. Or he's going, yeah. Craig Anderson, I love that guy. Or he, so it's are those guys moving product, though? Is that 15-year-old kid going and buying Quiksilver stuff or Hurley stuff based on Tiago Perez? No.
Not based off Tiago, but the kid in Portugal is.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And those are emerging markets. You know what I mean? And you're in my market. It's evolved to where you and I aren't buying product, but the 15-year-old kid whose mom is paying for the product, those are the kids.
Well, yeah, you and I are totally out of the demographic anyway,
but then there's
my 15-year-old son, his buddies.
Yeah.
And we always talk about this ad nauseum again.
Yeah.
But,
hey, but you said... You've told me in the past your son's maybe buying Brixton or some lesser brand like that.
My dogs are going off.
Scott, by the way, we're recording this episode at Scott's surfboard warehouse is what I like to call it. You're talking about your son would like to buy brands like Brixton or some lesser, you know, smaller upcoming brand that appeals to the core more. There's also new retailers like Mollusk, who seems to be catering to that market and has done a really good job with it, where they're making it, it still has that hangout feel. Are you familiar with Mollusk?
Oh, yeah.
Up in San Francisco. I think they've got one in Venice, maybe Silver Lake.
Yeah.
So they've got a very core feel.
Yeah.
But they're actually doing it on a fairly large scale.
Yeah.
And it's not insincere. I think that they've just done a great job of creating this community store in a lot of different communities.
Yeah, and it's a different vibe, like, isn't it? It's more art. It's more creative.
Yeah.
It's more. It's just
it's craftsman, artisanal, like low production.
Yeah.
Except, like I said, they're doing it on a large volume now.
Yeah.
And it's not faked, but it. You know, it's.
It's a little lumber sexual, isn't it?
Is that a term?
Yeah. That's
hilarious.
That look when you got a
beard
and you drive a Prius and you almost like you.
Oh, no.
You're very close to being lumber sexual.
I'm not wearing a flannel.
Can you change your tire?
Yeah, but I'll call AAA first.
Okay, so see, but you look with a flannel and the boots and the lumberjack look, you should be able to fix a tire. You should be able to, you know, sail a boat. You know, you should be able to do these. You should have tools in your car. You know, and if you've got that lumber sexual look and you reach for the AAA card, you fit the...
That's an official lumber sexual. Yeah. That's not lumberjack.
No.
That's lumber sexual.
Yeah, it's a take on metro sexual.
No, I get it completely. As I sip my coffee with my...
Yeah.
Now, first of all...
If your coffee has, like, a side of artisanal marshmallows, then you're lumber sexual.
I drink my coffee black, which... Probably somewhat.
Your beard is getting close to you. You drive a Prius. You've got a beard.
I shave once a week, and so that day is tomorrow. I don't go full beard.
Do you go to Mollusk to get your beard trimmed, or do you just do it?
No, I just do it myself. Right. Dollar Shave Club, baby.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Ah.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Anyway, those stores are great, and they're sort of a different concept, though, than these Quicksilver Board Rider stores.
But it's been interesting to keep tabs on Quicksilver along the way, so that's the latest update.
I even heard a stupid rumor that Billabong and Quicksilver are going to join forces and become,
I think it's just a rumor?
It is a rumor. It's not. I mean, that's complete fallacy. That would never happen. What they will share is distribution stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff. A lot of the under the streets of Disneyland stuff they'll be sharing.
As far as I'm concerned, that just comes from the fact that Oak Tree Financial is involved in both companies, and so people speculate like, oh, they're going to...
Right.
It'll never happen.
Yeah, no. But they will probably streamline some of their
distribution
and
of course.
Salesforce and all that.
No, it's like, look, Budweiser owns 90% of the beer SKUs when you go over to the beer aisle in the grocery store, and that's beneficial to them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, rather than competing with other brands, they just buy up the brands and keep that SKU on the shelf. And so, but they streamline the distribution and everything that you're saying. So those are my comments on Quicksilver. I got one other business-related topic. Kelly Slater doing electric commercials during this Vulcan Pipe Pro. Have you noticed that?
I didn't see that, no.
I've commented probably a year ago that I've never seen Kelly Slater wear sunglasses in my life, which I just thought was an interesting...
That's a good point.
And now all of a sudden in the past year he's wearing sunglasses, and I think that his company that he's involved with, for what's the name of the company, Caring Group that is involved with Outer Known, they're representing Outer Known or helping distribute whatever, also owns Vulcan, or
Vulcan owns Electric, right?
Is involved with that.
Then there's
the Vulcan Electric connection.
Yeah.
So I think that's Kelly's thing, is like Kelly is being kind of an ambassador for these brands, maybe unofficial ambassador, but it was weird to see him in an actual electric commercial during the Vulcan Pipe Pro. I was like, whoa, the guy's all of a sudden in not only wearing sunglasses, but now hawking sunglasses.
And the trunks he's wearing, are those Outer Known trunks?
No, I've seen him wearing Vulcan trunks.
Right, that's interesting to me. Like, if I was the Outer Known marketing guy, I'd be like, dude, what are you doing? Like, do we sell board shorts? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, why aren't you wearing them?
Right. And not even
that
putting Outer Known stickers on his board.
That blows me away.
Yeah.
Because how does he explain that away? This is performance. Well, so you're telling me I'm buying $145 non-performance board shorts?
Right.
I'd rather buy the $60 performance ones from Vulcan.
Call it out, Bassie.
Well, I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I feel like with his boards... and all of it, it's like it's all in the testing stage still. And so he's not going to take it out in life-threatening conditions until the tests are all sorted out. But you're right. Outer Known board shorts are on the market, and they are being sold for $120.
And he's not wearing them
in this contest. Well, I've seen him wearing Vulcan shorts. I don't know that he's not wearing them at all. I've seen him wearing Vulcan shorts. Hmm. So that's a good question. A couple of other thoughts on the Vulcan Pipe Pro. The reason I saw that, or when I saw that commercial, it was in between heats, but they also put an inset of the live footage while they're running the commercial, which I love, and that's something that the WSL should definitely institute. Rather than in between heats cutting away to commercial and we're not getting the live feed, and then they come back and try to give you a recap of what happened during the commercial, that was always problematic for me. Now they have the inset of the live feed,
which I think
is a huge
benefit
for the viewer.
You know who I credit for that? And I don't even know if this is true, but Richard Wolcott really has his fingers on everything that happens here.
He's still core.
He's totally core. He gets it. He's like, and he looks at it like we do from a end user experience. And he's like, you know what is lame is when we cut to commercial and I can't see the contest.
Exactly.
He's back at his home watching it, you know, when he's not actually in the booth. He's probably at the Vulcan
completely.
House.
The only value of this is the live feed. Otherwise, we'll watch a prepackaged thing later.
Yeah.
So give us the live feed. That's all we care about.
I don't know that it's Richard Wolcott, but I'm pretty confident. I know him well enough to know that
he's like you said, he's core. He gets it. And he's like, you know what, you guys, we got to change this. I can't have us going to commercial when there's live action going down.
And the sponsors are probably thinking, no, we're paying for this space. We want 100% of this space. And he's going, look, we'll have more viewers if we're giving the viewers what they want.
Yeah.
We're gonna turn the audio down from the live feed so you get the audio 100%. But I agree. And by the way, the ratio of the commercial versus the inset, it's mostly commercial. Like the commercial screen is larger than the inset of the live footage. So it's mostly commercial.
And you know, because this is a QS3000 or whatever, what we'll just call the WQS, you know, it obviously has a feel like the old WCT before the WSL got involved. This looks like the Volcom, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's got Volcom written all over it. There's not a whole lot of WSL. It's
right.
It's wrapped in Volcom. And Richard's a smart guy. He's like, I've got the best event during the best time period, and I have complete control, and Volcom is just all over this thing.
Yep.
And it's sort of against what I thought Paul Speaker and those guys wanted to do.
Yeah, Volcom commentators.
Yeah.
Their own team.
I mean, this is very much like 2011.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Do you like it?
I don't not like it.
I like it.
Yeah, it doesn't rub me the wrong way at all, although right. Some of the commentators, you know, but look, WSL has commentating issues as well.
Yeah.
I will say that Richard Wolcott's one of the better commentators. I've said
agreed.
It before.
Yeah, agreed.
But the thing about Wolcott is that he's all about the action in the water. Like, they can be talking BS about whatever it is, electric mm-hmm. sunglasses or whatever, you know, just talking about whales jumping or whatever. If he sees something happening, he focuses the rest of the commentating booth on the action in the water. He's like, hey, you guys, we've got some action coming. There's a set coming. He always keeps it focused on what's happening in the water instead of, like, you know, riffing about what you had for lunch or whatever. And I just get that he's really focused on the end user experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan. And just for the record, they do have Joe Turpel in the booth, who is a WSL commentator. But then they've got a couple new guys, too. They've got Ronnie Blakey's brother, Vaughn, who's editor at Surfing Life. And then Sal Masekela's back for the first time in a long time. Chris Cote's gone. I know that he was doing this event in the past, so I'm not sure about that. Do you want to talk about the event? They've only run, I think, 2 days so far. Maybe, yeah, 2 days.
Well,
they're in round three right
frankly,
now.
Frankly, you know, yesterday was the beginning of round three, and it was all-time best ever. I was talking to somebody last night about it, and I was like, if there was ever a time that I could go out and surf Pipeline, the type of conditions, you know,
yeah.
It was yesterday, where it was not a drop of water out of place, just all-time incredible. Just I won't say it was easy, but it looked like if I ever had the balls to go do it, that would be the type of conditions that I would do it in.
With only three other guys in the water and water patrol.
Nobody out.
Yeah,
full
exactly.
Water patrol. And like,
so when you wipe out, they're there.
Yeah, I need people there. Yeah, I'm going to need lunch. I'm going to need a lot of things. I'm going to need like Tom Carroll there to get me fired up. I'm going to need him to go, mate, let's go. We got this. In fact, I would want to do it with Tom Carroll when he's frothing really hard.
Borrow his helmet.
Just to get me fired up to get out there. But you
totally.
Know what? It was just so good yesterday. And the funny thing about yesterday, well, not funny, but interesting characteristic of the swell, it was all really good lefts. It was old school pipe, all these great lefts. And the one ride that stood out was Zeke Lau's backdoor 10 that he got. You know, so interesting. It only takes one sneaker north bomb to come in at the back door to almost steal the thunder from all day long killer spitting lefts.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's funny how many times in the past month or two we've said, this was the best day of competition we've ever seen. Like round four at the Pipe Masters, then the Piahi Challenge, and then like there, and now again. But it is. I mean, it is. Like, it keeps the bar keeps setting.
It's pretty,
the standard keeps getting pushed higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
It's the best time to be a surf fan.
It's pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good to have four guys in the water at this event.
It's not hyperbole. It's just like,
it was crazy. And you could tell the stoke on the guys. I remember, Corey Arambidi had a heat yesterday where he, within 10 seconds of his heat starting, he was standing in the most, you know, the thickest, spittingest, deepest, meanest. And you could tell they were all just sincerely stoked to be able to surf it with four guys.
Totally. A lot of waves. I mean, guys were getting insane barrels and getting like threes.
Yeah.
Because
guys were arching in the tube, but because they weren't deep enough, they were getting threes. You know,
right.
It was epic.
Yeah, it really is. Mason Ho just won his heat, by the way, in round three.
And guys that stood out, you know, Chris Ward stood out.
Who else?
John Florence? Paranines?
Well, I wanted to say there's a guys that stood out, like Chris Ward and Zeke Lau and Kelly Slater.
No, Kelly didn't.
Well, point is that all of them were schooled by John. When John went out in his heat and did what he did out there, you just went, you know what? There's all those guys, and then there's John Florence, and he truly looks on a totally different level than the rest of the guys.
Toying with it.
Toying.
It's crazy.
The under-the-lip drop that he made in that heat yesterday afternoon was just mind-blowing.
I know. It's insane. One other guy who I will say, he's not John level, but it was super impressive, Koa Smith.
Yeah.
The goofy foot Koa Smith. Yep. He's made it through all of his heats with a pair of nines.
Yeah, he's not John level.
He's not John level, but it's impressive.
He'll be like John level.
He should be in the final.
When I see him go backdoor and do something insane backdoor on his backhand.
Yeah.
But, yeah. John's just through the roof mental.
No question about it. It's just, love me some John.
Yeah. And, I mean, and it shows. I mean, you look at the results. I think he's won 4 of the last 6, and the other two guys were Jamie O'Brien and Kelly Slater. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And Jamie's right there, but I just think John's above everybody, and Jamie's pretty damn close, but Jamie's getting older. He's a little bigger, and I think his size sometimes hinders him. I mean, he makes the waves look smaller. Jamie's a big guy.
Jamie would be unbelievable. I mean, like, we'd be talking about Jamie all day long if John hadn't come along.
I know.
It's like, he's incredibly impressive. Just gets outshined.
Well, I hope that it all holds up because, you know, Bruce Irons look good.
I don't know about that. Bruce Irons got one good wave in the dying minute of his heat that made him look good.
Yeah.
I'm still not on board with Brucey.
I'm not either, for the record.
Yeah, I mean,
I am not. Didn't I lose $100?
You lost $100 on
Brucey. I lost $100 to David Scales because of Bruce Irons at the Pipe Masters.
Yeah, and
he's laughing right now. He's like, ah, sucker.
Reiterate, love me. I love Bruce in the past. You know, I'm a huge Bruce fan in general, but he has failed to deliver one too many times, and that most recent time was this Billabong Pipe Masters in December. And I will say his free surf stuff looks better than it's looked in recent years, but it's still not old Brucey. His performance in this event is better than his Pipe Masters performance, but it's still not old Brucey. I always feel like we talk about Kelly Slater way too much, and I go into these shows thinking, no more Kelly talk, no more John talk, let's focus on some nuance. But then Slater always does something so radical, oftentimes right before we go to mic, like go to record, and then I feel a need that I have to talk about him. Did you see yesterday, wearechange.org released a 15-minute interview with him?
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
It's my must-see moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we can wait to get into that.
Oh, yeah. I've got a whole segment on that.
What about when he rescued the mom and the baby at Waimea? Or where were they? Haleiwa? I don't know where they were.
It doesn't matter.
They're on the North Shore. They get swept away. Should we wait to talk about till must-see moment? Or?
No, let's talk about it.
Dude, Kelly Slater. I'm sure people already read this story or saw it, but like literally, This surf photographer was in Hawaii vacationing with his wife and kid, or maybe working, but they're from Australia. The wife and kid were going for a walk. She was jogging with the stroller, but she had her earphones in, so she couldn't really hear this giant wave that day that Kelly didn't make the paddle out at Waimea. The reason why he was on the beach was because he didn't make the paddle out, and so he was just watching it, but this giant wave came in, swept across the road, hit her and her baby, knocked her off this bridge, pushed her into this forest ravine area. He, a buddy, and 3 lifeguards saw it happening, dove in and rescued her and the baby. Kelly humbly explains, look, if I wasn't there, the lifeguards were there, they would have handled it. It's not like I was this lone superhero act. And he also said, even if the lifeguards weren't there, the tide would have went out and she probably would have been okay on her own. But there was 20 seconds where nobody could see the woman and her child, and it was really scary. By the way, your battery's low. I don't know if you need to plug it in or not.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, it's like stories like that come out about Kelly, and it's like, dude, we got to talk about Kelly. The guy's a superhero, you know?
Yeah, so Kelly, he is a superhero. You know, it's that whole video... It's fascinating, right? For a number of reasons.
Were you talking about the wearechange.org one? Yeah. Okay.
Where he discusses...
Explain it.
Well,
I don't know the guy's name, but a reporter or a producer for WeAreChange.org hooked up with Kelly. Kelly's a fan of WeAreChange.org. I think Kelly reads some of the stuff or watches some of the videos. And they hooked up, and he did a 15-minute interview with Kelly on the beach at where Kelly stays, right there at Pipe. And it's just, you know, we would be doing a disservice to our listeners if we didn't just say, hey, just go watch it. You know, and you can see the video. It's probably on your site. I know it's on my site, boardroomshow.com. It's up right now. And it reiterates why Kelly Slater is my favorite surfer. And it has nothing to do with Kelly's ability in the water anymore.
They hardly even talk about surfing.
Yeah, and even if they did, that's not why he's my favorite surfer. He's my favorite surfer because he has this humility on land that is it's just incredibly charming, right? I mean, the fact that he's so honest about himself, and he's open-minded, he's willing to look at things from an entirely different perspective. I mean, he talks in that video about making amends to people when he's wrong and how that's where he finds the most growth in his life. He talks about challenging his own ego. He basically says, I'm my harshest critic, and it's hard to do. But when I do it, that's where I've learned more about myself than I ever thought I would know. I mean, he just goes into some really fascinating areas regarding his own personal growth. And it shows that he transcends surfing. He's a great ambassador, he's just a great human being.
Seems like it.
Totally. Yeah, it seems like. Look, we all have our faults.
I'm not questioning
it. He's not perfect. Nobody is. But
in regard to what...
You don't see this kind of introspection. You don't see this kind of honesty. You don't see this kind of... he's the first
elevated
person.
Thinking.
Yeah. You just don't see it anywhere, really, in the sports world. I mean, he says stuff that's way beyond just your normal sound bites that your handlers would have you say.
Well, a couple of thoughts. The thing that you said about making amends and then him talking about being his harshest critic, he connects those two thoughts with, I've also, because I'm a harsh critic on myself, I'm a harsh critic on those around me, and it's to my own detriment of human relationships, basically. Like, I realize I've been too hard on people, and because that's the way I am on myself, but that's not the way other people want to be treated. And so then I find myself damaging things, and I feel a need to then go make amends. And when I make those amends, I realize growth and how I can, you know, be more humble and that sort of thing. So, yes, I agree. But the great thing about it is that's none of that is what the interview was about. It all came up when Kelly's explaining his view on politics and saying, anytime I take too strong of a stance, I realize it's due to my own insecurity or things that I'm afraid of. I take a super strong stand in the opposite direction, and then I realize later, oh, I should have been more gracious in my viewpoint and accommodating of other people's viewpoint or whatever, you know? So they're talking about Monsanto. They're talking about the 2011 presidential race in America.
2016.
I'm sorry. 2016 presidential race in America.
9/11
comes up. It's like these non-surfing, highly politically and emotionally charged topics that Kelly takes a stance on, which you also don't get professional athletes and personalities to do.
No.
So there's so many layers in this super simplistic, I mean, what comes across is like pretty simple 15-minute piece they go really deep in.
Yeah, and it's real easy sort of as a critic or a cynic to kind of go, oh, okay, Kelly's one of these conspiracy theorists or, you know, to take your own opinion on what Kelly's saying. Mm-hmm. What's not easy is to have this same type of open mind that Kelly has, mm-hmm. and go, you know what? Maybe I should look at this from a different perspective, you know? And I don't agree with everything Kelly Slater has. I'm sure he doesn't agree. I'm sure you don't agree with everything I have to say. I'm sure people around me do. But the point is that am I willing and open-minded enough and honest with myself enough to just look at it from a different perspective, to look at it from Kelly's perspective, to look at it from your perspective, David? Do I have that within myself? And that is where growth comes from, personally.
I completely agree. Kelly has a huge platform and microphone, but he's not promoting any of that stuff or pumping it down our throats. He has these very educated and, you know, strong views on things, but he's not really actively promoting it. He's waiting until somebody like this comes and asks him thoughtful questions, and then he engages in the debate.
And
you know,
and he's also saying, hey, you know what? Do your own research.
Totally.
Like, go look it up like I did. I've been reading about this stuff. You know? I don't know if it's right or wrong, but this seems, you know, he also goes to a place where he says, I can generally tell that when people are talking from their heart and being honest, that, you know, it makes sense to me. Like, I'm drawn to that rather than mainstream media, which might have, which does have an agenda of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. I really like that piece a lot.
I did too. It was really good.
Yeah. SurfSplendorPodcast.com is where you can find it. And then, of course, Boardroom Show.
BoardroomShow.com. That video is on there now. I don't know if this portion of the show, by the way, brought to you by BoardroomShow.com.
Is it really?
Yeah. We've relaunched the website.
Wow, I'll expect my sponsor check in the mail.
Yeah, you will get some pesos. BoardroomShow.com. We've completely relaunched it. So go check it out. We've got videos. We've got content. We're trying to make it a little different than your average surf content website. But of course, you can get all the information on the Boardroom Show itself, which is coming up May 14th and 15th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds, honoring Icon of Foam, tribute to the Master Shape Off, happening honoring Jerry Lopez.
Huge.
Amongst other
things.
So
exciting.
Got a bunch of cool stuff going on.
I want to discuss something in the realm of surf video, because you know that's where my passion lies.
Yes.
Maybe you don't want to engage in this conversation, but
let
me just roll it out and see what you think.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Dill and Beej project?
No.
Okay.
I'm busy. I've been watching Allman Brothers on YouTube.
And buying
random
shirts
off eBay.
There's nothing to watch.
And you just listen to it. You don't even watch it. It's just like the album cover and you listen.
So Dylan Perillo and Brendan Gibbons spent a year filming this thing, multiple countries, doing this. Yeah.
Who?
Okay. Doing this really thoughtful, nuanced 10-minute edit. You know, a year of filming. I think Monster Energy Drink was sponsoring it.
Is it all artsy-fartsy with
little
like
bit,
out
little,
of focus?
Little
like
Kai Neville.
Flower fields?
Yes. A little bit of that Kai Neville thumbprint on it.
I've never
it.
Seen that before.
Yeah, I know. So, but here's my thought on it is they spend a year doing this thing and put it out. All this money, investment, blah, blah, blah. The thing has 30,000 views.
Oh, no, really?
Right? I mean,
that's too bad.
It is too bad. And they surf.
Is it worth more views?
No. That's my question is, like, this surf video platform that is constantly evolving, where you got John Florence on one end spending $2 million to do View from a Blue Moon. Is he going to see a return on that investment? I don't think so.
Well, and then, it depends what you mean by ROI.
Well, okay. Yeah, okay. So is it a marketing
it
ploy
is.
Only?
For that, it is. Yeah.
Well, then why are they selling it for $15 on iTunes?
Just to make up a little bit of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you have other, like Craig Anderson's, Welcome Elsewhere that he put out 2 or 3 weeks ago. It has 250,000 views and it's completely for free. Like, that's a little bit better. Then you got Mikey Wright's thing that I had as my must-see moment last week.
Yeah.
Which is only 3 minutes long. It took 3 weeks to film, and it has 85,000 views. I mean, that's almost three times as much as Dylan and Brendan's 10-minute version.
Yeah.
Which of these has the most return on investment? For Mikey Wright's, which is a little investment, has a good return for Quicksilver, which is his main sponsor. Like, this, I don't have a specific question other than this platform is constantly evolving.
It's interesting.
How much do you invest? What do you do? Do you just do a 3-minute thing? Do you do a 10-minute thing? I don't know. It's just interesting to watch and see. And like Brendan and Dylan's thing, I liked, but I kind of wish I had that 10 minutes back. They're good surfers, but I'd rather just keep tabs on their Instagram posts every day rather than investing a full and over the course of a year, that will be 10 minutes because it's 15 seconds at a time.
Well, John's thing, right? You get the feeling they're like, hey, look, let's just test the waters. Let's put it out there for $15 and see what happens. I mean, he's John. If anyone's going to buy anything, it's going to be this, right? And it's probably doing okay. I don't know if they're making back a little bit of their money or not, right? The Dylan thing's for free, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, I just feel like you better be John if you expect a lot of views. But you bring up Mikey Wright. Mikey Wright, just that thing blew up on its own. It went viral because it was just so radical.
Exactly.
And I think that sort of fly in the champagne, artsy, groovy, Kai Neville, that whole thing, once it's done, it's been done. And yeah, it'll come back in 15 years and be groovy again. But you almost have to kind of keep reinventing the wheel and be ahead of the curve a little bit on this stuff to get you your attention.
Right.
You know, otherwise it's like, oh yeah, I've seen it. I want my 10 minutes back.
Yep.
Just give me a 2-minute clip of the good stuff from that 10 minutes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because, look, these are people pour their hearts into these things. These are artistic endeavors, creative endeavors. These guys work their ass off to make this thing. And I'm sure it's really cool. I'm sure it's, you know, worthy 10 minutes. But we're inundated with stuff.
Exactly.
I frankly found the Kelly Slater thing the most fascinating surf piece I've seen in a long time.
Times 10.
It was incredible.
Yeah. It was 10 times more fascinating than the Dillon Beach project.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and by the way, I can watch Pipeline right now. Vulcan Pipe Pro is going off its face. I can watch 8 hours of it for free and or not watch it.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
Show us something that we don't want. You know.
That surf, we don't want.
I mean, that we don't, that we haven't seen.
Right.
Is what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just. You know, like I said, I want to hear about, like, you and I could riff some topics right now. Like, what would you want to hear about? Well, I want to hear about the guy who stopped surfing. Like, I want to know the day Herbie Fletcher decides to stop surfing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know why. I want to know what went through his mind. I want to know, does he miss it? I want to know, maybe that day isn't going to come. Maybe he's going to surf till he dies.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe he's going to be like... Flippy Hoffman, you know, that just gets wheeled down to the beach in his wheelchair and just has to have a connection with the ocean. And what will your, what will it look like for you, David, on the last day of your life when you surf? Or what will it look like for the listener that, have they thought about, you know what, when I'm 50, I'm going to give it up. When I'm 40, when I get married and 30 and I have kids, I'm going to have to give it up. Like when, like that's semi-interesting. So there's a lot of the interesting topics that could be thrown out there, spitballed on a whiteboard, and maybe developed and excavated and created into something of interest, you know?
Yeah. Who, I mean, the interesting thing about surfing is people, it's rare for people to give it up completely. There are those examples, but I have a feeling a lot more people have given up skiing.
Mike Hinson gave up surfing at a certain age. He just stopped surfing, right?
Yeah.
Does David Nueva surf anymore? I don't know.
I see him at the beach all the time, but I don't see him surfing.
Well, Carl Ekstrom's a great example.
Yeah.
Carl Ekstrom stopped when he was like 40.
I know.
You know, like, how do you just stop? Like,
I don't
it's
know.
Kind of fascinating to me. Like, I don't think it's that easy, you know?
Yeah, I really don't know. Crazy. All right, what else
well,
you
that's
got?
Just one topic, right? So if you're a potential new film producer or
video
producer.
Yeah, if you're a storyteller.
What's the story you're going to tell? And please don't let it be, you know, surfing's my everything, my life, and it's my spiritual connection, and I love it, and I'm going to do it forever, because that will make us vomit.
Yeah, and that Dillon Beach project and even the Craig Anderson one, it's like you said, the style of editing, we've seen like super high resolution red cam action footage cut away to super 8 footage of flowers and wheat blowing in the field, and then some indigenous kid, you know, running to chase a ball, and
it's
then
also
like,
cliche.
It's so just, cliche.
It's all
like
been done,
I want to
you know?
Throw up, and it's like I didn't even think it was cool when it first was happening, but I've seen it so many times. Anyway,
what about a story on the criminal records of professional surfers?
I like it. That's
gutsy.
I mean,
you're going to make a lot of enemies, but you and I would be interested in seeing it.
Totally, Matt you know? Warshaw, next writing assignment.
I mean, you know, like. Look, Marvin Foster went to jail. Like, a lot of guys have gone to jail, man.
Oh, dude, a ton.
What if we just excavated why? Like, what's the common root here? Did they not have fathers? Like, where were their family structure like? What was the socioeconomic status of the region they grew up in? Like, all of these things have some... That's interesting. You know, like, now, okay, I'm into it. You know, like, who else has been busted for... Everyone, there's so many guys been busted for...
I'm apprehensive to even name names.
Chris Ward been put into like the criminal system, justice system somewhere? I mean, there's guys that, you know...
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're not good guys and everyone deserves a second chance. I'm just saying, hey, look, that would be something that may interest us as viewers, like the criminal history of pro surfers.
Dude, so last week I released an interview with the guy who made... the Anthony Rufo film, Learning to Breathe.
There's another great example.
Did you watch that film?
I didn't watch it, but I went on Beach Crit and I read some of the commentary on it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it. It looks like a pretty good movie.
I watched it. It is good. It's very interesting. It's super raw. Like, I mean, Rufo's on there pouring his heart out, like talking about... And the guy who made it, his name's Rocky Romano.
Yeah.
And so I did an interview with Rocky Romano.
I saw it. You were on Beach Grit, weren't you?
Yeah. So then I transcribed it because I talked to Derek about it in advance.
Yeah.
And he's like, they had run
their Rory
Parker did like a film review of it, and
Rory got really opinionated and totally. It caught a lot of flack.
So he caught a lot of flack in the comments section.
Right.
So then I reached out to Derek and I'm like, hey, I interviewed Rocky and I'll send you a transcript of it if you just want to run that on your site. And he's like, yeah, totally. So then I did that, and then they've got 200 comments on the transcribed interview that I did. And Maurice Cole was a big commenter on there, taking a pretty you know, opinionated stance, and a lot of people were anti Maurice's stance. So a lot of it became back and forth of just things that were taking place in the comment section that didn't have anything to do with my piece at all. But 200 comments as opposed to their average 20 comments, you know, like, it stirred a pretty heated debate, which I think is great. And I was interested to just see where that debate goes, because it was a topic of conversation that we don't see very often in surfing. It's something that people avoid. Like, to your point of what you're saying is, these are the stories that need to be discussed and need to be extracted, because we steer away from it.
And it brought out themes that are dealt with in everyday life, whether you live in Hawaii or Michigan.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And drug use specifically. It's a theme in everyday life, yeah, and really prominent.
It touches everybody.
It's an accurate stereotype of surf culture. This is a problem in the surf community.
Yeah.
Let's discuss it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what that film
and
does.
And you got guys protecting guys, and guys protecting their legacy, and guys protecting the surf culture, and all sorts of stuff. So it does stir up a lot of angst, a lot of emotion, and that's a great topic. I wanted to see it. I was sent the little code to watch it, and I just, you know, I got buried with life.
Well, interestingly,
which is code for the waves were really good, I think.
Interestingly, that film came out a couple years ago.
Right.
I feel like it didn't come out. It did.
It felt like it was fresh.
I mean, when it hit, it had like all this hype before it hit, and then I feel like it came out but disappeared. Nobody commented on it.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, it gets published for free for 72 hours. That's been this new life that it found. But what I heard was that Rufo and a lot of the Santa Cruz community didn't stand behind the film. Like, the final edit of it, they didn't really sign off on. But Rocky was like, hey, look, you guys did sign the consent forms. I don't care what you feel about it now. Like, this is an accurate telling of it. I'm not painting as ugly of a picture as I could have. Like, this is just the telling of it. If you're not happy with it, you're not happy with the decisions that you've made, basically, is what his stance was. And I reached out to Rufo to get his side of it, but he never commented back. And that door's still open. Like, I'd love to hear kind of his opinion and the general opinion of the Santa Cruz community about it.
Yeah.
But even as you said, look, let's tell these stories of guys who have gone to jail and criminal records. I'm a little nervous. Like, yeah. I don't know that I really want to.
I don't. There's
it's speaking a can of worms.
Speaking of ROI, there's no return on investment for you, the filmmaker, if you do that. Unless you're
what about
working
the podcast maker? Like, we have no return on the investment anyways.
Right.
Like, the only obligation we have is to our listenership, and they will send emails saying, you guys need to tell those stories. Who else is going to tell them?
Well, Vice News is going to tell them. You know, guys that get paid to tell them are going to tell them, you know. Like,
but the thing is, you don't get paid to tell those stories.
Exactly.
That's when the sponsors pull their money. You and I, why wouldn't we tell them?
Because, quite frankly, I'm sort of in that space, you know. Like, I deal in the surf industry, so right. Do you, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, I know that you have a paycheck that comes from a company in the surf industry. I have a lot of paychecks that come from companies in the surf industry, and it gets to a weird place where it's like, why am I biting the hand that feeds me? What's the upside again? Oh, right. I lose money,
right?
To, you know, so maybe it's not my place, you know. It's the place of somebody that's completely devoid and free and liberated of any connections.
Lewis Samuels.
I think he's connected.
I think last I heard he was working for Twitter or something.
I don't know, but
I don't know either, actually.
But whoever the young, it's going to be a young idealistic filmmaker that for whatever reason wants to make a name for himself and create something great, which would be a move up the ladder for him so that he could become a producer on a much bigger level and leave the surf space behind.
Yeah.
But if you're going to dwell and work in this space and not leave this space, it's you're sort of a catch 22. It's like Warshaw said, you know, like surf journalism is at its best when it's not
surf advocacy.
Moonlighting as surf advocacy, when it's really telling the hard, honest truth, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll make a promise to our listeners that if they want to help me become independently wealthy, I will then tell these stories.
Yeah.
PayPal your money
yeah.
to my account.
Right.
And then I will go independent and rogue and dig deep. That is my promise to our listeners.
All right.
It might take significant investment on their part, but hey, you will get raw entertainment.
I think there are stories that the surf video producer can tell that that are still fascinating, that still touch on subjects that are universal, that aren't necessarily like how high in the air did you get on that last wave.
Yeah.
That can be told and told, you know, in a good way.
Yeah.
In the proper way.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Well, what else do you got? Any other topics of conversation?
No.
I've got must-see Dukes and Coots.
Oh, I do have one other one. The Inland Surf Park put out a release. They're on track for their spring 2016 opening. So this is the latest update from Doug Kors, who's the engineer and surfer behind the Austin, Texas, right? Doug Kors is bringing the ocean to Austin, Texas, says the press release. Inland Surf Park will be the only inland surf destination in North America. David, you and I spoke about this last time, I think. But they put out this release that they're on track. They sent pictures of, you know, them laying the concrete, digging the trenches. It's going to be a massive 9 football field area footprint with the wave garden technology. So this pulling wave technology, you know, small waves, medium waves, large waves, 4 or 5 different pools for different levels. All in Austin, Texas, brought to you by Doug Kors, who, of course, is from the Kors Brewing family.
Yep.
So all that's on track for a spring opening, which is just 2 or 3 months away. So that's going to be pretty fascinating.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out as a business model.
Yeah. Call me when it's 6 feet and perfect.
There you go. One of your best lines, man.
That's really not my line. I think it came from Chris Morrow or somebody.
Oh, really?
Amazing. Yeah.
Oh. Well, my must-see moment, I'm sure everybody's already seen, is Tom Doslin's wipeout
at
Piahi.
So good.
So good.
Can't believe he lived.
Nobody can believe he lived. I mean, Billy Kemper was like, dude, 99.9% of people would have died in that scenario. If not from a heart attack in mid-fall, definitely from the impact and getting sucked over the falls. Tom Doslin stood up at the top of a massive wave at Piahi, and then just got hung up and pitched and jumped and did this free fall, I mean, starfish, upside down, almost all the way down the face before he actually hit the water. It was incredible, absolutely remarkable. And then his leash, I mean, that thing got stretched 30 feet? I don't know. His leash got stretched so far in the photo. His board gets caught in the wind and ends up above the lip of the wave when he's almost at the bottom of the wave. It's insane. So, really remarkable stuff. Must-see moment.
Yeah.
My Duke is going out to Brock Little.
Yeah.
Who you mentioned. Found out about a month. He found out 1 month ago that he actually has cancer.
Yeah.
And he let everybody know through Instagram just a few days ago, where he posted a photo of himself standing on the balcony in this like twilight sunset lighting, flexing his muscles, but he is gaunt. I mean, he's known as being super fit waterman, indestructible. And this photo of him is really, really scary. Like, he's lost a ton of weight and
he looks older.
He looks older. He doesn't look good. He's bald. He's been doing chemo for 3 weeks, and shows.
I heard through the grapevine that he found out, and it was all throughout his body. Like, it's pretty bad, you know? Like,
he said it's in his bones. It's in his liver. He doesn't even know what type of cancer it is, but it's everywhere.
And I had heard that he was just going to, like, ride out the deal and not go through the chemo. And I think some friends rallied around him and said, hey, look. And so he's opted now for the chemo and he's going for it. So, I mean, everybody, you know, Brock was, I surfed with Brock one time out at Laniakea, and I was just a kook from California. This was like 1988. And it was pumping, huge, early season, October, Laniakea, maybe 10 to 12 feet, 15-foot sets, really big. And it was crowded, and he was a full-on standout. And everybody kind of like, as crowded as it was, when he paddled through the pack, everyone made way for him. And he went out to the main peak out there. I remember... who's the guy from Santa Cruz too that was out there dominating? Richie Schmidt, but the other cowboy charger guy. I'm losing my mind. Vince Collier? Yeah, Vince Collier. Okay. So Vince Collier was out there charging, and he and Brock were standouts that day as I watched those guys just dominate. But yeah, Brock, it's sad, you know, he's not gone yet. So
no, but
everyone's pulling for him.
And at this point, I mean, we've all been affected by cancer, all of our families. I'm sure you have. I've had multiple family members die. So it hits close to home, and seeing that image, it's just so impactful.
Yeah.
But Brock, or the aforementioned Derek Riley at Stab, I'm not at Stab, I'm sorry, at Beach Grit, called Brock, and he recorded the interview, and they had a phone conversation, and so he posted that on Beach Grit. I will embed it on Surf Splendor podcast. It's about a 7-minute interview that he has with Brock, and Brock is super candid, and he's like, it's effed up, it doesn't look good, like, but I'm grateful for the life that I've had, you know. And I found it well worth the 7 minutes to listen to it. And Derek asks some questions like, hey, are you starting to have existential thoughts about dying? And Brock answers those. So I would really encourage people to check that out.
That's
listen
the
to
kind
that.
Of stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, like, yeah, totally.
There's tons of surf porn out there, but there's deeper stuff that that gets our attention.
Yeah, and then Warshaw engaged in a conversation with Derek as well on Beach Grit. And one of the things that I thought was interesting, or that kind of hit me, I don't know, the hardest, was talked about Brock being so handsome and rugged and like ladies man kind of. But in all of his conversations with Brock, it would always come up about Brock being heartbroken, of like, Brock wanted to get married and have kids, and it never really worked out. And it's like, he had some great love affairs, one of which was with Kate Bosworth during the filming of Blue Crush, where they came over to film. Kate was 19 years old, nubile 19-year-old, and the filmmakers are like, who is the most responsible among these local boys that can show her around the island and the water and everything? And they're like, Brock is the most responsible, reliable dude. Let's hook her up with Brock. And Brock said, hey, it was platonic for a couple of weeks, but, you know, if things, one thing led to another. So he had this love affair with Kate Bosworth, and Matt revealed that detail. And but in the end, Brock would always be like, hey, man, my girlfriend ended up leaving me, and she's dating this lifeguard now, and I'm so heartbroken about it. And so that always stuck with Matt, where it's like, you know, he's not a ladies man just trying to make all these conquests. Like, he wants to make it work. And I don't know, something about that story stuck with me, or made me, I don't know, pulled on my heartstrings for Brock a little bit. So Duke of the week, Brock Little, shout out, fight the good fight. My kook of the week is the Brazilian WQS events, who still owe competitors money from last year.
Wow.
Yeah, have you seen this story?
No, where'd you get that?
This That's was published one. On Stab. They did an interview with Barrick DeVries and Perth Standlick and some of these QS warriors who are still owed. Literally, Barrick DeVries is owed $4,600 from an event last year that he still hasn't been paid for. The WSL has gotten involved, but there's only so much they can do. In their own rule book, the contest organizers have 7 days to pay these contestants. And these contestants are owed money from, I don't know, over a year ago, but definitely last year's events. So these guys are guys who are living off credit cards, and then they make heats and eventually, hopefully, can pay down their...
Is the WSL responsible?
No.
QS events in Brazil?
They're the overseeing organization, but in the rule book, they are not held responsible. Huh. But they do have people on staff who help chase down the money. But ultimately, the sponsors of the events and the organizers are the ones who are supposed to be paying these. And
right, but it's a WSL event. Or no?
It's a WSL event, but in the rule book, they're not left holding the purse strings in the end. Hmm. So
doesn't sound like a WSL event to me.
Yeah, I don't know. But
that's weird.
But those are the kooks, is the organizers of those events in Brazil.
Sure, the
WSL, and the sponsors.
They must not like that too much.
No, and I'm sure that'll dictate who's going to sponsor the event next year. You know what I mean? But, like,
and even some policy changes where it's
of course.
Like, I'm going to need an escrow account with the monies in the account.
Yeah, exactly. So
my kook of the week.
I'll link to that event on stabmag.com, by the way, on surfsplendorpodcast.com.
My kook of the week is the Army Corps of Engineers, where in New Jersey, they've installed a metal pipe under the sand. This was done a while ago. And that metal pipe under the sand, under the waves, has these large coupling rings, each ring with what amounts to a sharp penetrating steel stabbing device attached to the pipe every 5 or 6 feet. And the latest run of great surf, by the way, which we hadn't even touched on, but the East Coast has been pumping like mental barrels. Winter Storm Jonas has exposed this pipe. So now there's this massive pipe with these massively sharp steel stabbing devices every 6 feet sticking out of the pipe. Some little kid or a surfer is going to get punctured. And you couldn't have crafted a more medieval-looking weapon. And so the Army Corps of Engineers is my kook of the week. Of course, I'm not even sure if they're responsible for it, but I'm blaming them. And that comes to us from a loyal listener, Bill Rosenblatt.
Okay, is there a reason why it was designed that way? Is it supposed to stab something?
The government?
Okay.
Because it's a government project? Because some bureaucrat could care less and... Who knows?
It was meant to keep skateboarders from like rail sliding it.
No, it's in the ocean.
Well, I know, but then they use that pipe for the ocean. I don't know.
All I know is it's a stabbing device ready to stab.
I don't like it.
No.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Yeah.
Great show, Scott.
Yeah, great show.
Thanks for bringing your A game, dude.
Oh, I always bring my A game.
Oh, do you?
When else do I have like a drum solo?
Going out
that's,
on the drum
that's
solo.
70s right there. That's so 70s. Drum solo so we can go backstage and drink some beers.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, of course, and engage in this conversation with Scott and I. That's what we always say. Leave comments, social media, at Surf Splendor and at the Boardroom or
BoardroomShow.com. Go check it out. That's where you can get this podcast. I'm all SoundCloud. I've got SoundCloud. You haven't seen my new site, have you? You haven't even gone there.
I have, actually.
Okay, so BoardroomShow.com, SurfSplendorPodcast.com. That's where you can get this show. Until next time, adios and aloha.
Dear darling, it's been a long, long, lonely winter. Dear darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun.
Richie Haven to sing us out. The full track list of every episode of Surf Splendor is available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can also leave a comment on the website about today's show or any past episode. Like I mentioned to Scott, I did that Rocky Romano interview, the filmmaker who made Learning to Breathe, the Anthony Ruffo profile piece. That was last week. So go back, check out that episode from last week. It's gotten a lot of plays, a lot of interest, a lot of comments, obviously. So check that out. Share that with friends. Share this show with friends. And look forward to a brand new episode next week. We update every week. And we do these news episodes every other week. And then the alternating week is a profile piece, like that one with Rocky. So check all of that out. It's all available for free on SurfSplendorPodcast.com, along with everything else that I just mentioned. Thank you for doing that. And follow us on social media at SurfSplendor. That is all that we ask. And we will keep producing the content for you. All right? Deal. David Scales here, signing off, saying, until next week, I encourage you, catch a couple waves, get out in the ocean, and shred on.
Here comes the sun, here comes
comes the sun, I'll say it's all right.